I was going to say maybe this is a good point to transition to when you discovered the Catholic vindicatory miracles. When did that come into your story?
Yeah. Well, basically, a lot of it happened when, so I think the first time I ever came across it was when an atheist was challenging me on Clubhouse about like why miracles don't happen anymore, you know? And so then I started looking into it. Like, I mean, obviously at the time I was familiar with enough miracles, right? So like there's like the Craig Keener, Barbara Schneider case, and there's the, you know, Our Lady of Zaytun. And so I had enough there to answer him. But I was like, you know what? I haven't really looked into Catholic miracles. So that's something I should look into because I know we have claims. And so the first ones that I really looked into were like Our Lady of Lourdes. And when I looked into those, I was just like, wow, it's astonishing. the level of evidence that we have and the rigor for proving these healing miracles. And even like, I didn't even like the way the Lourdes Medical Bureau had done it because they were applying the Lambertini criteria so rigorously that like they were also failing to pick up on like a statistical miracle. So like, if you look, there are lots and lots and lots of healings at Lourdes that don't satisfy the Lambertini criteria, but where if we took them collectively as an aggregate, the statistical likelihood of this many naturalistically explicable cures that are this rare coinciding in this context with this good of a connection to Lourdes is vanishingly small. Like even with the 70 or so approved healings, which are naturalistically inexplicable and do satisfy all the Lambertini criteria, like taken individually, they're enough. And taken together, they're just like gobsmackingly good evidence, like proof beyond a reasonable doubt, you know, for at least the existence of God and probably for the authenticity of Our Lady of Lourdes. But then if you add on top of that, the thousands and thousands of other cures that don't satisfy criteria that strict, and then you go look and you say, okay, and this is something I actually did, was like a statistical analysis where I'm looking and I'm saying, people just say, oh, if you had lots of pilgrims who came, you would just expect lots of cures by chance to be associated with Our Lady of Lourdes, right? So then I actually just decided, okay, well, let's get quantitative about it. So basically, how many cures this good would I expect with what probability based on the number of exposure minutes of eligible pilgrims? Because there are criteria for exclusion where, so if you don't have a certain type of illness or if you're receiving a certain type of treatment, you're automatically going to be excluded from consideration for approval. So it really actually narrows down the pool way smaller than what people claim when you actually look at the eligible pool of pilgrims. And then you also look at the number of exposure minutes within close connection. And so I basically have modeled it a bunch of different ways, and it's like 10 to the negative 80 or something insane. Like it's totally impossible. I mean, and these are very charitable assumptions because some of these cures, like I'm going with like the base rate for the closest cure. And in some cases, the closest cure is not even close. So it's insane how good Lourdes is. And I'm planning on writing that up and doing full post about it. But so that was the first one where I started saying like, okay, we've got like insanely good evidence for Catholic miracles. So I want to press this further. And so then I started learning about Fatima and I came across Father Dr. Delure's paper and I was like, we have photographic proof that the miracle happened. Oh, this is awesome. You know, 20th century miracle. And then look at the Padre Pio case and you're just like it's like 80 million extremely well documented, you know, photographs, tons of testimonies for a whole wide range of different phenomena. It's insane. You know, you look at the Eucharistic miracles and you're like, okay, you're saying it's a bacteria. Like here's a picture. That's not a bacteria. Like, you know, that's not fungus. That's not bacteria. It's clearly not possible what you're saying. And these are the best things the skeptics put on the table. You're just like, that's not true. That's ridiculous. Like I have eyes, like I'm looking at it with my eyes, like not to mention a million other arguments, but I'm looking at it with my eyes. What you're saying does not compute. Like you're just planning on me not looking.
Wow. So what's so interesting about your story is that the miracle stuff didn't happen until after you were convinced. So like some people, again, like some people might approach this interview and be like, oh yeah, he just like read about these miracles and like that's what did it. But no, it was after the fact. The most impressive stuff happened after you already became Catholic, which is actually how I feel. Like I wish I would have known about these miracles before I converted. You know, I converted on the basis of like this Bayesian analysis of the papacy, and I didn't have like access to this stuff back then. And I wish I had, but I mean, you had some actual thoughts on that when I told you earlier. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think it's actually good for two reasons.
What was good?
That we encounter the best evidence and the best arguments after we had already gone through this journey where we were converted. And basically the two reasons why I think that's true. I mean, first is, I actually think it's just in line with how God chooses to reveal himself to everybody, where it's like, you start out where it's like, you're initially making this like leap of faith, you know, and then it's only later on that you're becoming like confirmed and strengthened in your faith and developing this deeper relationship. But there's something special to me that like, I made this decision to become Catholic and to pursue this and to explore this before it was like almost like foisted upon me coercively. So now that I am Catholic, I'm glad that I have enough there to where I never have to doubt it, and I can conform my whole life to it and like spread it and like evangelize people and try to save as many souls as possible. But it was actually, you know, blessed are those who have believed without seeing. You know, there's something nice about being able to have made that initial decision when there was like a fog of uncertainty that I no longer have that's cleared up. And then just the second thing is, I think it's actually something that keeps us humble and is kind of like a lesson in theology, which is just like, you don't save yourself. And it's you were not the one who was responsible for you being initiated into the Catholic Church. It was God who drew you and he called you to the church. And so lest you have all this pride where you're like, oh, well, it's because I'm such a smart guy who's such a good investigator that I discovered all this stuff and I found all the best arguments and then I joined. It's a way of keeping us humble, especially since you and I, we're both people who are making it our public mission in life to spread the faith with a battering ram with all the best arguments. And so I think it's especially good for us to have that testimony where it was like, that wasn't where we started, you know, and that wasn't how we got here. And it's just, but for the grace of God, you know, there go I.
Yeah, that's good. That's super good.